Okay. All right. So, I know that we're each bringing a little different bit of.
This is the dumb show expose on Christmas.
Yeah.
Christmas.
In years past, if I might go Dickensian on you, in years past we have celebrated the Christmas holiday. We've celebrated the ideas of.
You can only go Dickensian on me if you can spell it.
Okay. Do I have to do that now?
Well, if you're going to go to Kinsey and you've got to spell it.
All right, then I won't then. Okay. In years past, we've gotten...
the worst of times is the best of times.
Now I'm thinking to Kinsey in the back of my mind. Anyway, as part of our dumb show expose on Christmas, I have gone out and I have sought an interview with a mall Santa.
Cool. Yeah. So you're going to...
My idea was I wanted to find out what life was like...
As a mall Santa. All right.
Now, the gentleman that we interviewed, I cannot mention his name.
Right, sure.
We
can't mention the mall.
We cannot mention the mall.
Or anything like that.
We cannot mention any of that kind of stuff. And we are going to disguise his voice. His voice will be
per
disguised.
Per his request, right?
He has very much requested that. As a matter of fact, at the beginning of the interview, you will hear me tell him that that's what we're going to do and confirm that with him. I was shocked. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah,
I was shocked at some of the things that I discovered. So we're going to bring this to you in three parts,
right?
And I think we're ready to roll with the first one.
Right. So just to set it up for everybody, we're going to go into three segments. In between, I've done some stuff,
sure.
Which I've covered Donner and Dunder and Blitzen and Blixum and Mistletoe. So we're going to throw that in. Just to kind of spice things up a little bit, yeah. Because we divided and conquered on this one, and I think it's well worth it. So we'll roll that
beautiful bean footage.
Well, I don't know about beans. It depends on what kind of Santa he is, I suppose. But
I wasn't going to say anything. But anyway, here's the first part of the
play the Yule log
Santa expose. So we're going to disguise your voice. And we will not mention your name anywhere in the podcast. If we do, I will bleep it out. If a mistake happens, your name will not make it to air.
That's great.
And of course, we will not mention your name on the website at all. So what we want to talk to you about is kind of the plight of the mall Santa. I think it is an understated problem here in America. The issues that mall Santas have to face once a year, every year, and I want to talk about sort of some of your colleagues as well as we get further and further on into the interview. Now, just kind of give us a little rundown of how you got the job. How did you wind up in this line of business?
Well, I've always been a big fan of Christmas.
Okay,
Christmas has always been a special time for me. And it's actually kind of funny, last Christmas, I've only been doing this for about 2 years, I was working as a gently used shoe salesman down the block, you know, and I won't disclose the name of the place.
Okay.
And an old friend of mine from high school was actually doing it himself. And
Mall Santa.
Yeah, Mall Santa.
Okay.
And we were just kind of, you know, talking about it while he was trying on a pair of loafers, and it just says, you know, well, I got a great job. You know, I've always known you love Christmas. I've been pretty obnoxious about it all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, why don't you get involved in that? The look on his face was kind of confusing, and so he was laughing really hard.
Okay. Now, what did you expect it to be? When this conversation happened, how did you envision the job? Tell me kind of what you saw in your mind.
Well, really and truly, I had a kind of a perfect world scenario.
What did that look like?
You know, just sitting around on a floating snowscape. Just beautiful children, just walking down your lap, asking you what, you know, telling you what they want for Christmas, and, you know, being like, well, I'll get it for you, you know, and just instilling that hope. I was hoping that, you know, well, maybe I could actually deliver the presents, but I know that, you know, that was just...
It's a dreamer, right?
Well, sure.
But, nothing like it actually is. The reality was completely different.
So tell us about that reality. Tell us about the reality first. What is it really like as a mall Santa? Give us kind of a rundown of your typical day.
Well, I come in and I clock in early, you know, to kind of get in character. I go into the dressing room and practice what I call my hose. You know,
what does that mean?
You know, well, the ho-ho-ho is...
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Oh, all right.
Go ahead.
The ho-ho-ho is a very complex, nearly Shakespearean process.
Exactly what do you mean by that? I mean, most people will take it for granted that it's just, you know, saying the word ho three times and, yeah. You know.
Well, and most are wrong. The ho-ho-ho is probably the hardest part of the job. It's a matter of many inflections, and when you repeat the same word three times, people think, you know, they kind of throw it together, just slap it on there. And even some of my coworkers, I won't name any of them.
Okay.
We're not huge fans of each other, but, you know, people tend to rush through it. You really gotta savor the hose here. I mean, you really gotta space them out, you know. So I spend a good 3 hours before work just looking into a mirror and, you know, giving all my best to the hose that morning. So.
Can you kind of give us a demonstration of maybe some what you'd think of as
a good ho ho?
Yeah, give us an example if you don't.
All right, I haven't had my practice, but I'll give it a try.
Sure.
This one is a quizzical ho ho.
Okay,
this is one out of my bag of tricks. Ho ho ho. See.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of. Really in the diaphragm.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the heart as well.
So. Yeah. Do me a favor and back away from the mic.
Oh, I can do that one more time. No, it's fine. You give it gusto, and it's great.
You know, that's great. North Pole wind.
give us another one, though, real quick. Just you know, back away from the mic a few inches and really just let one go.
All right, this is my lead the attack.
Okay. All right.
Ho! Ho!
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez, I didn't realize there was a lot of attacking with Santa Clauses there. I mean,
we have an emergency plan.
Oh, okay. That's bizarre. People don't realize exactly what all goes into this. They really don't.
Oh no, not at all. It's kind of like a fireman. I equate it to the fireman. You know.
Yeah.
People think it's all about the big red truck and the big red sleigh, if you will.
Oh sure.
And, yeah. A lot of it's rushing through the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Or having kids sit on your lap.
Now, since you brought that up, let's talk about that. What is that like? I mean, you have over the course of holiday season. How many kids would you say sit in your lap? I mean, over the whole holiday season every year.
I would say it gets upwards to a couple thousand.
Wow.
Yeah. On the good days.
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't have the spirit like they should.
Mm-hmm.
But, I had a lot of kids in my lap.
Is it awkward at all? I mean, you've got parents basically walking in and putting their child in your lap and they've never met you before? I mean,
Well, they have, you see.
Well, okay. But, I mean, no offense. I don't mean to offend you here, but we all know that you're not the real Santa Claus. I mean, there are mall Santas... you know, all over the country, all over the world, if you will. And so these parents know that you're just some guy, you know, I mean, 11 months out of the year, you know, you have, I'm assuming, another job that you go to.
Oh, yeah, the gently used shoe store.
Exactly. I didn't know if you went back to that or not.
But, oh, yeah.
So you're just a normal guy. What is that like to have parents just come thrust their children at you?
Well, actually, that's a good question. Like I said, there's a multifaceted profession in mall Santa. And I think one of the things that people also kind of throw to the side is at that moment, when a child sits on your lap, you are Santa.
I guess that's kind of how you have to think about it, isn't it?
And I hope that's the way the parents think about it. If not, we should really rethink the parental... structure.
Sure, yeah.
But
I really don't think they have a problem with me, because when I sit down in that chair and have my two elves by my side, I am Santa Claus. And I try to convince not only the children, the parents, and myself.
Interesting. That's very interesting. The bad children.
Ooh.
Talk to us about those.
Well, I've had my fair share of those who would end up on my naughty list.
Mm-hmm.
I've been punched in the crotch a few times. Not something I'm proud of. I'm just kind of have to, take control of the situation. You could bring up the old lump of coal in the stocking bit if you can.
Does that really work, though, nowadays? I mean, do most kids know what a lump of coal is? And I mean, I know it's one of those holiday traditions, but, I mean, is the idea still across that that's a bad thing?
Well, I think that kind of lost its working value after the Industrial Revolution, kind of.
Sure.
Because coal's...
Yeah.
But,
internal combustion engine sort of really
did that in. Really, gasoline itself.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Torn a hole in the Christmas spirit. But I think I've used it a couple times, the lump of coal threat. Mainly it just gets me punched in the crotch some more, which, you know, that's also, again, multifaceted job, crotch strength.
Yeah.
But as hard as it is to deal with it, I think of it as what doesn't kill me makes me stronger.
Mm.
And what doesn't kill me is Santa Claus. Makes me a stronger Santa Claus.
At what age is a child too old to sit on Santa's lap?
26.
Okay. All right. What about the smart-ass kids?
Oh.
The ones that show up and start talking to you about how can you fly around the world in one night and visit everybody's house and, you know, those, I mean, how do reindeer fly and, you know, how do you fit all those presents on your sleigh, and why a sleigh, and, you know, all those kinds of questions. How do you deal with those?
Well, it's an old friend of mine who actually just retired from the Santa gig, gave me a saying, and it is, you cover bullshit more bullshit.
Mm.
Whenever a kid comes up to you and says, you know, well, how can you fly around the world? I mean, will you tell him the truth? The magic sleigh.
Mm.
And you say it with such a sharp wit that he doesn't, doesn't question it.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you are Santa Claus.
Now, good job. I have to give you kudos on your little expose.
Thank you.
The mall Santas.
Thank you.
I think it's very fascinating, and I look forward to our next segment
sure,
of it, but
sure.
I want to throw one out here for you.
Okay.
Thunder and lightning.
Okay.
Now, you know, Christmas as a source has a ton of legends and myths and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
If you asked the average American to name Santa's reindeer, eight and all, right, the first name to probably pop up would probably be...
Donner, right? Any of the first one on the list?
No. If I were just to walk up and say, name a reindeer.
Oh, it'd be Rudolph. I was thinking of the ones in the
right,
poem.
Right. The next two would probably be, no doubt.
Donner, yeah.
Donner.
And Blitzen.
Right.
Right.
But the problem is, Donner.
Vixen pops putting, right, is pretty up there on the list for me,
well,
too. Though.
I know how you like Vixens.
Yeah.
But are those names correct? Now, the Christmas ditty that references this, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, was a 1949 hit tune sung and recorded by Gene Autry, based on a character originally created by a marketing team for Montgomery Ward in 1939.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. But I thought that they were in the original Night Before Christmas poem as well.
Well, I'm going to get to that.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
The lyrics were written by Johnny Marks, who borrowed most of the reindeer names from the classic 1823 poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, more commonly known as...
'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Right.
Right.
By... Do you remember who?
No, I don't remember.
Henry Livingston Jr.
Oh, okay.
Now, Clement Clark Moore got credit for the poem, but he was probably not the author, but that's a whole other thing to get. That's a whole other ball of wax. Now, the original poem refers to eight tiny reindeer.
Mm-hmm.
If we add Rudolph in, we actually make it 9
okay.
tiny reindeer. Mm-hmm. And the poem gives each of them a name. Now okay. Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Dunder, and Blixem.
Dunder and Blixem?
Yeah. You've always heard of Donner and Blitzen, right?
Yeah.
But their original names were Dunder and Blixem. They were former Dutch names written into the poem by Livingston.
Well, why were they changed?
Well, apparently...
I mean, other than to Americanize it, which, you know, we're known to do.
Well, apparently the later versions modified by Moore in 1844 were the two names. They were changed to Donder and Blitzen.
Okay, so wait a minute. We've gone from Dunder to Blitzem.
Dunder and Blixem.
Blixem, pardon me. Dunder and Blixem.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's changed again around 1849?
Four.
Okay. To...
Donder.
Donder. And Blitzen.
Blitzen.
Okay, so that one's right at that point. I mean, according to what we know.
Right.
And then after that, it goes back to... And then it goes Donner and Blitzen?
Well, right. See, so we go from Dutch, and then Moore comes in 1844, changes it to the German Donder, which means thunder.
Okay.
And Blitzen, which means lightning.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To better rhyme with Vixen, who is
fan favorite. Yeah, fan favorite of mine.
Finally, but for some reason, the song, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Marx turned Donder into Donner. Now, whether he made the change because he knew German or because it just sounded better is, you know,
yeah,
uncertain. In any event, there's certainly some logic in using German Donner and Blitzen, which again means thunder and lightning.
Sure.
For the names. Since 1950 or so, the two reindeer names have been Donner and Blitzen in both the Rudolph song and in the Visit of St. Nicholas poem.
Sure. Well, I read that every year to the kids.
Right.
You know, here in a couple of days, I'll be reading it in front of the fire right before Santa Claus comes on Christmas Eve. I will be saying Donner and Blitzen.
Right. And we give credit to Marx, but there's a little asterisk. Because he's not necessarily the first one to make the Donner name change.
Oh.
According to Snopes' page, cites a 1926 New York Times article that specifically mentions the switch from the Dutch names to German Donner and Blitzen. And as early as 1906, the Times published a version of the Visit poem that also used the German names.
Okay, so now, it was not changed to Donner until, say, the 20th century. Is that
right.
Fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that kind of blows my theory right out of the water. I mean,
yes, this is pre World War II and World War I. And
well, no,
to be
that wasn't my theory, but good point.
To get the German out of it.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, that would make a little bit of sense anyway, as well. But what I'm thinking of is, I wonder if the name change to Donner would have had anything to do with the Donner Party. Which is really kind of odd if you'd think about it, because what you're doing there is sort of celebrating cannibalism right here at the Christmas season.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a
theory. I'm just thinking.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a start.
I mean,
it's a start.
I mean, it's a very wide. This is something I was unaware of that had created a lot of controversy. Over the past, say, 150 years or so. And I don't know. I'm not sure of the exact dates of the Donner Party, you know,
yeah.
Right off the top of my head. I mean, I could look it up and everything, but it was early 1800s, wasn't it? I mean, it was Western expansion stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to go on that lane of thought, why don't we change it to Dahmer and Blitzen?
In the late 20th century, we could.
Yeah, so now it could be Dahmer.
Dahmer and... Why is that? Why? That's weird too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we may actually be tapping into something here, unbeknownst.
Yeah.
Because if you think
definitely tapping into something.
Definitely. I mean, think about it. And I've never thought of that about this before. But Donner, the Donner Party,
mm-hmm.
cannibalism.
Mm-hmm.
Dahmer,
mm-hmm.
cannibalism.
Right.
I mean, you do the math. I'm just saying. These are just theories.
So people with last names that start with D, complain emails can be sent to T. Quillen.
Well, they have to rhyme with, you know, Ahmer.
Okay. All right. Well, we could change it to Downer then, I guess.
That's it.
But, yeah.
We'd have to find something to go with Blitzen.
Yeah. Well, I don't Blitzen.
Blitzen's kind of got the bad rap, though. He's been lumped in with Donner, though, the whole time.
Well, guilty by association.
Well, that's, yeah.
I mean, it's the historical precedent of thunder and lightning. You can't have thunder without lightning.
That's true. Have you, when was the last time you watched the Rankin-Bass Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know, the one with the kind of the claymation thing? When was the last time you watched that?
About 15 minutes ago.
That's about what it was for me, too. It's one of Ian's favorite things. I was watching it the other day with Ian, and it occurred to me that there's no way that that show could ever be made now. Because Santa Claus comes out looking like an ass.
Yeah.
He comes out looking like a complete prick. He and, is it Donner as the dad?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. See?
Yeah, it's all there in the name. Yeah.
But he comes, I mean, both of those guys come across as being just pricks.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Well, to a certain extent, I guess they were. I mean, they all were.
Well, yeah, making fun of Rudolph and everything for his differences and everything. Yeah. I mean, there's so many potential ties in with, you know, with all kinds of social ills, you know. I mean, you can just any kind of quote-unquote anything that sets you aside from whatever the norm is supposed to be.
Right.
All of a sudden lumps you into that same category with Rudolph. I mean, it's kind of an allegory if you think about it.
Yeah, it is an allegory, yeah. I always thought of you as kind of a Hermy anyway.
Well, I'm not just a nitwit.
No, you're not. No.
Why can't I fit in, John? Why can't I fit in?
I think size has a little bit to do with
it.
Well,
thank you. Okay, well, thank you for bringing up the controversy. But I mean,
I tried to do some
this is some
journalistic integrity stuff, and it's good. You know, you've taken it and
shifted it to cannibalism. You have to explore all the options, John.
Well, that's true.
I mean, you can't just show, you know, you can't just tell one side of a story. You know, got to explore all of them.
I thought I did explore all of them.
I'm just saying I was the one that had to bring up the cannibalism thing. That's all.
I know you were the one that had to bring up the cannibalism thing. I mean, this is a holiday special. Nobody wants to hear about cannibalism on the holiday special.
I just think it's a conspiracy. Pass me that rack of ham over there.
Yeah, all right.
I'm speechless about the whole this controversy that you've uncovered about the names of.
Well,
I mean, it's almost like the FBI Witness Protection Program. You know, it almost has that type of feel.
Well, this
to
episode
it
has that type of feel to it. I mean, with our undercover Santa.
Yeah,
which is fantastic. By the way, it's really been groundbreaking work, I think, on your journalism.
For the Tum Show, especially.
Well, I was, more specifically you. But,
well, thank you.
No, I'm serious. I think that was very interesting. So I can't
wait. There's
more
to come. All right, there's more to come.
Let's get into it.
All right. What is your camaraderie like with the people that you work with, your elves and usually there's someone standing at the desk, you know, sort of checking people in, because there's a lot of photography involved, which I will come to in a second. I want to ask you a question about that as well. But what do you get along with your elves? Is it the same elves every year? Do you have people that you prefer to work with, or
there's a huge elf turnover rate.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I can imagine why. I think, you know, maybe it's the whole I won't play a supporting role to Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of temp workers,
mm-hmm.
Especially from the factory downtown. You know, mm-hmm. at Christmas time, they kind of run slow.
Sure.
So get some of the burly, intimidating elves. But I mean, you know, you got to have a professional mm-hmm. working environment. And
now, one of the other questions that has always intrigued me is that there seem to be two kinds of elves in modern, I'm going to say modern society. There are the kind that go along with the Santa Claus, the small, tiny little creatures with, you know, pointed ears and pointed toes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Those kinds of things that sit there with Santa Claus. But then there are also, you know, you watch, you know, Lord of the Rings. You watch I mean, any of those types of movies like that. And there are these elves that are very, very tall creatures, you know, and I mean, they're elegant and they still have the pointy ears. But is there a difference between those two elves? Are they, I mean, are they the same? Or, I mean, do you ever have any of the elves that are, you know, that are of that? I mean, I don't know whether it's a racial feature or what, but I mean, is it, do you ever have any of the taller elves? Are any of the elves ever taller than you are?
We've had some miscasting every now and then.
Okay.
Mainly we're worried about the elven characters.
Mm-hmm.
To just, as long as the green sleeves cover up the tattoos.
Okay.
We're okay.
Okay.
As far as, you know, we make sure continuity as far as there are no dip cans or dip can indentions back of the...
Back of the suit.
Types are optional, but we frown upon when they don't, especially if the suits are too short. Like I said, large turnover rate. You have someone taller than the last elf, you can end up with a lawsuit on your hands. Right. So it, but I think the big difference, speaking in the actual Christmas world, is I think the lore goes, is elves live all over the world.
Okay.
However, on the North Pole, the gravitational pull is a little stronger, and so they don't grow as tall.
I see.
And they have rosy cheeks only because, you know, the wind is biting.
Right.
So
yeah, well, I would imagine that is the case. You don't have to answer this specifically, but what is the compensation like? I mean, are you making a livable wage here, or
I make a livable wage in the Christmas spirit.
But you are getting paid, right? I mean, financially speaking, are you getting money? Are you monetarily compensated for this at all?
Well,
health benefits. You talked about getting injured, hitting the crotch, those kinds of things. Workers' compensation. Any of that kind of stuff?
I'm working towards something like that.
Okay.
This is more of a leap of faith.
Okay. Is there a union?
Actually, yeah.
I'm not allowed in meetings yet.
How? I mean, why? Why not?
Well, me volunteering to work without monetary purposes.
Okay. So if you're in the union, then you're able to get the compensation benefits.
Yeah, but I worked during a strike once. And
See, that's tough.
I was beaten by it.
A lot of competition? I mean, not just amongst the union, but I'm talking about Santa Clauses in general. You know, I mean, you go to one mall, there's one Santa Claus. You drive down the street 10 minutes later and see another Santa Claus.
Yeah, we,
you know.
It's a capitalist endeavor. I think the competition, it's not as tough as it should be. I think a lot of the reason is because most of my competition is, I'm going to search for a word, drunk, I guess.
Oh, okay. Right.
But, you know, you gotta stay sharp out there, you know. Like I said, it's all about you are Santa Claus, and even if some Santa Claus is on the street, he's just some Santa Claus, not a reason.
Sure. What do you do, without giving away any trade secrets here, how do you set yourself apart as the Santa Claus, the one that people want to return to year after year?
I like to, like, you know, especially with the, I think of myself sort of like a thespian of sorts.
Okay.
I have my package that, you know, well, Christmas with a bow on top.
Right.
And I think of it as, you know, it's my presence. It, you know, it's a package that contains my presence.
Mm-hmm.
My presence.
I get it.
Well, I'm writing a book here.
Yeah.
My three hoes, which is, you know, where the work begins.
Sure.
And I think I have the nicest lap. In town.
Okay.
I don't advertise that, but I'm going to go ahead and say it.
Do you ever like secret shop the other Santa Clauses? Like go over to them and out of costume and sort of see what they're doing and
a little North Pole recon.
Yeah.
Every now and then, I've been known to pop in on another man's work.
You think people are doing it to you as well?
Yes. Cool. You know, and when that happens, I just turn on the spirit, rain it on them.
Yeah.
Just spray on the spirit.
If you suspect that's happening. Yeah. Median age of the kids that are coming to you. We talked about the how old is too old. What would you say would be the median age of children that are coming to you? I know you have them all the way from infants all the way to.
Oh yeah.
I think you said 26, was it?
26.
What is average or median? What's the average age?
Anywhere from, 9 to 14 for the most part. Of course, like younger and older, but around that, I have to say is the.
Okay.
It's been a long time since I took math. And,
do you mind my asking how old you are?
I'm ageless. Santa Claus.
I understand. That's not a problem. I want to go back to the Santa Claus competition thing. We talked about the fact that you're unionized, or there is a union. You're not part of it yet, I understand. But is there any competition, or is there any difference between, say, a mall Santa and the ones that you see in parades or any of those kinds of things? Are those two separate entities, or do they belong to the same union?
Actually, the entire entity of Santa Claus is connected in one union. I've read the brochure. This is how I know.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not letting the door yet. Sure. But you have a couple types of Santas. You have the marchers, who'd be your parades.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You have your laps, which are mostly sit-downs. And then you have your models, who are basically your pictures, and maybe people standing outside.
Photography type.
Yeah. Okay. And we communicate together. They communicate together in a nice community, trying to, it's almost like drug dealing. Oh, well, in fact, that you don't take over another man's turf.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another man's turf, meaning if he's been hired for this particular parade.
Year after year after year, then.
That's sort of his domain.
You kind of get grandfathered into a certain area, and you're supposed to stick there. If you're, supposedly moonlighting somewhere else, then men have been known to get shivved.
Wow, really?
Oh yeah.
That's surprising to me. I mean, considering Christmas spirit and all of that.
Well, they use syrup and candy canes. Oh, okay. Still, it's a little sinister.
But yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Do you have a mentor?
I do.
Can you tell, without mentioning names, obviously, can you tell us a little bit about him or her?
He was.
Let me pause. That's a good question. Do you have any female Santa Clauses? I mean, I know they would technically be probably Mrs. Claus, but do you have any female Santa Clauses that are sitting there acting as Santa Claus?
We try not to discriminate.
Okay.
But no.
Okay. All right. Tell us about your mentor. Let's go back to that. Tell us about your mentor.
Well, my mentor, he's a good man.
Mm-hmm.
Lives on his bare means, and lives down south, actually. Or rather up north, depends on how you look at it.
Uh-huh.
He's just a simple man, got a nice wife, works in a factory, until one night. It's in a sleigh with his reindeer.
Mm.
They go around the world and they deliver presents. Mm. That man is Santa Claus.
Wow.
That is my mentor.
Now, how did you, other than your friend coming up to you, how did you get associated with this particular mentor? Did he see something in you, or did you seek him out, or what?
Well, I think it's as far as seeking each other out, I think we were bound together, the convergence of the twain.
Okay.
I remember waking up one morning. When I was a child, I sat in the lap of a Santa Claus, and I wanted I forget what it is, but I woke up after Christmas Eve, and there it was under the tree, whatever it was that I liked. And from then on, I was like, you know what? I want to be like this man.
Mm.
I want to be like this man who makes dreams come true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did my research, went around the world,
know
him by all names. And ever since then, I began my journey.
Mm.
I think a lot of people think mall Santa is a steady occupation. I consider it a journey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just keep my eye on the North Pole,
Okay.
365 days a year.
So you're pretty committed then?
One would say that, yeah.
What's this green stuff?
It's mistletoe. Have you ever you know about the mistletoe and how you're supposed to?
Why is it in our studio, hanging directly between us?
Well, I just it's really a visual aid at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Mistletoe in and of itself is romantic. It's a romantic idea, sure, you know, that you hold it over, you hold this green thing over.
And I appreciate that, John.
The person
really
you care for, and you lay a smooch on.
Thank you. No, I mean, really.
I was more so talking about, you know, our wives and stuff. But
I'm with you. Go ahead.
You know, or the random office girl at the party. But I mean, you know, that's after a few
a few nogs.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, so the idea, right? It's romantic. Look at this.
Sure,
it's
right?
pretty and here, and I'm holding it over your head. Mm-hmm. Can kiss me, or I'm gonna drop it on your head, or whatever.
Stab you in the eye with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I well, I'm just saying.
Well, even Dahmer.
I know.
But let's talk about the plant itself.
Okay.
Okay. When you break it down a little bit, it sort of loses a little bit of its appeal.
Oh, no. Now, see, I brought up cannibalism, and you're going to destroy mistletoe?
Well, I'm not destroying it. I'm just laying out the facts like you so...
Okay. All right. I'm with you.
All right. So it is basically a partial parasite.
How can you be a partial?
It's a hemiparasite, a parasitic plant.
Okay.
It grows on the branches or trunks of trees and actually sends out roots that penetrate into the tree and take up nutrients.
Oh, good.
But mistletoe is also capable of growing on its own. Like other plants, it can be produced its own food by photosynthesis.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be a parasite. It's easier that way.
Right. It takes a path of least resistance, I suppose.
Okay.
But mistletoe is more commonly found growing as a parasitic plant. Now, there are two types of mistletoe. The mistletoe that's commonly used as Christmas decoration is Ferandron flavescens.
Wow.
Is native to North America and grows as a parasite on trees from New Jersey to Florida.
Okay.
Just, you know, that's the Garden State.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
There's a whole lot of things grow on trees in New Jersey.
Right.
The other type of mistletoe is Viscum album. It's the European variety.
Okay.
Now, the Greeks and earlier peoples thought that it had mystical powers, and down through the centuries, it became associated in many folklore customs.
Mm-hmm.
The European mistletoe is a green shrub with small yellow flowers and white sticky berries, which are considered... You ready for this?
I'm trying to be.
Poisonous.
Okay.
It is commonly seen on an apple, but rarely on oak trees. The rarer oak mistletoe was greatly venerated by the ancient Celts and Germans and used as ceremonial plants by early Europeans.
Hmm.
Now, the traditions began in with European mistletoe. They were transferred to the American plant with the process of, you know, immigration westward expansion and Donner parties, apparently.
Sure, yeah. I have an appetizer.
Right. Now, the origins of its name, the common name of the plant is derived from the ancient belief that mistletoe was propagated from bird droppings.
No, wait a minute. Let me... It was an ancient belief that mistletoe grew if a bird shit on something?
Right.
Okay.
This belief was related to the then-accepted principle that life could spring spontaneously...
Wow.
Spontaneously, I love this sentence. This is my fount of information here is Sarah Williams, by the way. So I just disclosure here.
All right,
but she creates a very wonderful sentence that life could spring spontaneously from dung. That was the ancient belief.
How ancient are we talking here? Because,
I mean, the Celts and Anglo-Saxons.
Oh, okay, all right. Wow. Take a dump and create life? Is that...
Pretty much. Yeah, that's the theory.
All right.
Which is not all that off, considering that dung is used as a fertilizer to grow plants.
True.
Okay,
true.
So it's not that far off. I mean, you can't just crap and all of a sudden, you know, your third son pops up or something. But,
Oh, if it were that easy.
We'd all be in trouble.
Wouldn't we?
But from that time, it was observed that mistletoe would often appear on a branch or twig where birds had left droppings.
Okay.
So that they put two and two and get four and a half.
Okay.
Mistle is the Anglo-Saxon word for dung.
Okay.
And tan is the word for twig. So mistletoe means dung on a twig, or in the modern parlance, on a stick.
First of all,
mm-hmm.
That is some fantastic journalistic investigative work.
Well, I got to give it all to Sarah Williams. I mean, I just few points and clicks, and I did some legwork. But you
were able to bring that to us.
That's true. Now, by the 16th century, botanists had discovered that the mistletoe plant was spread by seeds. So by the 16th century, we're losing sort of the dung effect.
Right. The mystery of the on a stick.
Which is passed through the digestive tract of birds. So the birds are still in there.
We're still back to on a stick.
Right? So they eat the seeds. They poop them out. The seeds, I guess, are like corn because you don't really digest corn.
That's true.
So you poop it out, and all of a sudden, now you're getting mistletoe. One of the earliest written references to this appeared in England in 1532.
Thank you for the corn reference. I just thank you for that. That's made my day. The image was...
Latin peanuts. Similar sort of analogy. I'm just trying to give you something that you can work with.
Thank you, because I'm I'm working.
Apparently, an herbal published by Turner in 1532. Botanists of the time also observed that the sticky berry seeds of the mistletoe tended to cling to the bills of birds. Mm-hmm. When the birds cleaned their bills by rubbing them against the branches or barks of trees, then the seeds were further scattered.
Mm-hmm.
So birds are propagating these seeds at both ends.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, the magical traditions from the earliest time of mistletoe has been one of the most magical, mysterious, and sacred plants of European folklore.
Okay, good. Now we're getting back into the magic and wonder of
it. It's considered a bestower of life and fertility.
Well, see, I've always associated that with this idea.
Oddly enough, even though the berries are poisonous, it was once considered a protectant against poison.
Oh, I'm not really sure how they got there, but okay.
Yeah, right. And, of course, as all things turn out to be in the long run, mm-hmm. it's an aphrodisiac.
It is, or it...
Well, that's what they believe.
Okay, right.
Because to be a bestower of life, you've got to have a little help.
Well... That's what I've heard.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. For aphrodisiacal purposes, I suppose.
Wow.
Never would you think you heard that phrase, would you?
No.
Aphrodisiacal purposes.
Wow, I mean, that's just...
The mistletoe...
A whole lot going on in that
word. The mistletoe of the sacred oak was especially sacred to the ancient Celtic druids, of course.
Okay.
On the sixth night of the moon, white-robed druid priests would cut the oak mistletoe with a golden sickle.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And two white bulls would be sacrificed amid prayers that the recipients of the mistletoe would prosper.
Mm.
So now we're taking the shit on the stick.
Rubbing it in cow's blood.
And we're killing bulls. Bulls, not
bulls,
cows.
Bulls, sorry.
Right? Cause we
bovine.
Well, because the cow's the female and the bull's the mrrr.
Sure.
So, for the aphrodisiac, you want to kill bulls and not cows.
Sure.
Later, the ritual of cutting the mistletoe from the oak came symbolized the emasculation of the old king by his successor.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Mistletoe was long regarded as both a sexual symbol and the, and then I have to do this because she did it in the article, the air quotes of soul of the oak.
Okay.
Yeah. Gathered at midsummer and winter solstices. And the custom of using mistletoe to decorate houses at Christmas is a survival of the Druid and other pre-Christian traditions. Mistletoe is still ceremonially plucked on Midsummer Eve in some Celtic and Scandinavian countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Middle Ages and later, branches of mistletoe were hung from ceilings to ward off evil spirits. Okay, so take her on the stick, put it on the wall, and hopefully...
Evil spirits go away.
Right. In Europe, they replaced over house and stable doors to prevent the entrance of witches. Apparently, witches don't like mistletoe.
Wow.
Mm. It was also believed that oak mistletoe could extinguish fire.
Wow.
This was associated with an earlier belief that the mistletoe itself could come to the tree during a flash of lightning.
Oh, here we go again.
Right? So in parts of England, Wales, farmers would give Christmas bunch of mistletoe to the first cow that calved in the new year. This was thought to bring good luck to the entire herd.
Okay.
And one has to question what good luck means to an entire herd of cows that are probably going to be slaughtered later on.
Sure. but don't have to dig too deep on it.
Okay.
There's a lot of blood in this episode.
A lot of blood. I mean, I'm just saying. A lot of shit.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what we bring. You can always find that here.
A lot of blood, a lot of shit.
The Inexplicable Dumb Show.
Brought to you by the Inexplicable Dumb Show. That's what we bring to the Christmas table.
Isn't it, though?
Kissing under the mistletoe is first found associated with the Greek festival of Saturnalia.
Okay, all right.
And later...
Yeah, see, this is what I've been wanting to get back to.
All right. You chastised me for not going around the whole...
I'm fine.
Donder and Blitzen. I'm just trying to give you the whole thing.
Right now, where I am is I'm still... the mystery of and the wonder of you know using the mistletoe you know as a way to kind of flirt and you know have a little fun type thing that's mm-hmm. gone for me now.
Okay, good. You're a married man. You shouldn't have that anymore.
I need you to get that back for me. I need okay. that back.
All right, so here we go. Kissing under the mistletoe is first found associated with again the Greek festival of Saturnalia.
Okay.
Later with primitive marriage rites.
Ah, see, there we go. That's what I need.
Mistletoe is believed to have the power of bestowing fertility,
mm-hmm.
and the dung
Jeez.
From which the mistletoe was thought to arise was also said to have, again, air quotes, life-giving power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In Scandinavia, mistletoe was considered a plant of peace under which enemies could declare a truce or warring spouses kiss and make up.
Yep.
Now, in some parts of England, the Christmas mistletoe is burned on the 12th night, lest all the boys and girls who have kissed under it never marry. So, there was a little bit of pressure there.
Wow, yeah.
That the English brought in.
I have no idea what that's like.
A little bit of the oppression of Jeez. The English.
Mm. Mm.
And for those who wish to observe the correct etiquette, a man should pluck a berry when he kisses a woman under the mistletoe, and when the last berry is gone, there should be no more kissing. Okay, so this is important. Your mistletoe has an expiration date, right?
So once you pop the cherry off of it,
once
no more.
Once the cherry has been plucked,
no more.
Then no more. You gotta get a new mistletoe.
Mm.
Now I do have.
Well, you brought the magic back.
Well, good, good. My next little expose is on the camel toe. Would you like to hear that? That's over here somewhere.
Tell me it's about kissing under it, because it's...
I don't know if that's possible.
Was it somebody else's?
It's a group kiss or something.
Thank you for bringing the holiday spirit around this table.
Yeah, no problem. But yeah, so when your grandma holds up the mistletoe,
don't do that. Come on,
for everybody out there, just think of shit on a stick.
God.
Tell your boss that at a company Christmas party. I'm sorry, I can't
bring him that.
Yeah,
take a dump on a stick. Bring it to him.
This is life giving.
That's right.
For the bailout.
We don't recommend that, by the way.
Send it to your congressman.
There you go. You went all the way around the world.
Well, you know,
you took me from just absolute blind passion for this, you know, mystical thing and this, you know,
right.
holiday tradition.
All right. And
you took the blinders off.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and laid it all bare.
Well, that's
pluck those cherries off that vine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's different once a cherry pops, you know?
It is. It's a lot different.
But, you know, I part of the pressure is this is this expose with the Santa's been. Once I heard we're doing that,
mm-hmm.
I thought, man, I got to bring a game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bring a game.
Oh, you have.
And that's what I brought with them. You know, I feel like I'm a light bringer.
Light bringer. Okay, yeah.
You know.
No, I agree. No, you very much are that. I have had my eyes opened.
Well, you know, your expose on the Santas has really made me. I gotta be honest, a little queasy.
Yeah, well,
about Santas. in the mall.
Yeah, as well, I think you should be. But I'm just gonna warn you, right now.
Yeah.
The some of the most shocking stuff is in this next segment.
Wow. I
this is the final segment of our three parts.
Okay.
And I hope you're okay afterwards.
I'm fine. I emailed my letter to Santa. So.
Okay. There's a lot of camera work involved. I mean, typically every time a child is put in your lap, you have a camera in front of you that's snapping pictures. Do you have any ongoing vision problems from these? From the flashes going off all the time, or?
Well, vision's not a problem. I think the problem actually lies in spiritual nature.
Mm.
You know, they have the whole thing where, supposedly you need your picture taken, it steals your soul.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about that.
Okay. That's something else you probably ought to bring up to the union.
Once they let me in, I'll be more than
what. Now, what do you have to do to get off? I know you said you were blacklisted. What do you have to do to get off that blacklist?
Well,
or what can you do? Maybe I guess I should say. How can you prove yourself that you're worthy of being back in the union or being in the union? Period.
Well, I think a lot of the reason I'm not in the union is kind of mutual. I'm pretty sure they're coming after me with the sharpened candy cane, so I kind of lie low. You know, I don't want to make myself known, and so maybe they forget. You know, I'm hoping Christmas spirit, one of these days they'll seek me out and welcome me into their own, but until now I'm kind of on the run. I'm glad you're not telling my name.
That's fine, yeah, like, exactly. We won't mention that at all. What is the title of the union?
Actually, it's, the American Santa Society.
Okay, alright. Now, do you moonlight as other holiday characters at all?
That's not allowed under ASS standards.
Oh, really? Okay, so you've got then there are Easter Bunny. There's a whole separate union for Easter Bunnies. There's a whole separate. Wow, those are the two biggies, I guess. What other
ones are there? Really? I know there's one out there for.
I mean, there's not a whole lot of Independence Day, you know, characters that you go in.
Yeah, I think Uncle Sam has their own, sometimes.
Not as prominent, though.
No, I know a few Uncle Sams. You know, and then you have, you know, your Witches Union.
Mm. A lot of holiday things.
Yeah, there's an underground for it. Santa Claus is your main, your tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of competition between the holiday characters, then, or...?
No, we kind of live our boundaries out, and we, you know, time is its own territory.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one final question here, and it can be kind of an awkward one.
Okay.
Do you ever get invited to, shall I say, special holiday parties, you know? Where the elves maybe not are dressed as much as some of the other elves are, and
some I have been known to go to these parties, your special parties.
Uh-huh. And is that something that's condoned by the union at all?
It's frowned upon by the ASS. I'm not really sure.
And this
what their official stance is.
Okay. But now again, we're not using your name. This is completely. You know, this is a completely blind interview.
Well, when I go to these parties, I keep the ASS in mind.
Sure. Do you actually, is this something that you do regularly, or, and what can you tell us about these? I mean, this to me seems like it might be the sort of the dark underbelly of the mall Santa.
As a Santa, I think, you know, your job is not only to maintain a committed level, professionalism and reality.
Okay.
What I call PNR.
Mm-hmm.
But also to have fun, you know, enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. And so these parties are fantastic.
You make extra money kind of doing this, or?
It has its perks.
Okay.
You know, I haven't been to one in a couple of years considering there's some photos circling around. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but apparently there was... I and a couple of elven-like others, and apparently compromising physician. I was told never to come back to these parties, but I like to think that you know, some people turn over a new leaf. They are elves.
Sure.
And
now we're forgive the forwardness of this question. Were they? I mean, I'm assuming there are female elves.
Oh yeah.
Were these female elves?
Oh yeah. Oh, I mean yeah. Okay. They're female elves, but like I said, you know, I try to stay professional. Even though the union will not let me in right now, I have to play my cards right.
Sure. So
when I go to these parties, it's all about the ASS.
Okay.
Always.
Okay.
What kind of activities can one see at these parties? I'm assuming they're by invitation only, but what kind of activities go on at these parties? I mean, this is a raw kind of expose interview, so be candid.
We have a lot of, like, Nog Pong.
Okay.
Play that, Flip Mug.
How does that work?
It's basically, I hear there's a game out there like it, but you basically flip a mug. You have to drink your nog really fast, which is really, I wouldn't recommend it. It's pretty rough
stuff.
Yeah.
But, nog stands, we have a lot of those.
Is that kind of like a, where you're standing on your head and you have to...
Yeah, big difference is this with nog.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, sure, it could be like that.
Okay. What else is there? I mean, I'm assuming that there's a lot of mistletoe play.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What about, how involved are these parties?
Involved.
Yeah. How thoroughly do you have to play your part?
Oh, we are committed on the outside. We are committed on the inside. Key is, you work a sound, you play a sound.
Okay.
And so, I have to have, like I said, the oldest people in my lab have been 26. At least that's what they told me.
Okay, well now, is that a temptation at all? Depending upon your sexual preference, if you were to have someone of, you know, an older age, let's say that you have a 35-year-old suddenly come up and try to sit in your lap. What if one of the mothers that is bringing the kids over there all of a sudden plops down in your lap and starts, I don't know, playing with your beard and whispering what she wants in your ear and those kinds of things. How do you deal with that? I mean, are there protocols in place? Or?
Well, before the elves come up and mace her and take her away.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I play my part. You know?
Okay.
I think Senna is about people of all ages.
Okay.
People don't grow out of Senna.
Okay.
Senna does not grow you either. So it's, Senna's there for you.
Okay.
If someone wants to just talk, you know, hey, I'm willing to, you know.
How many telephone numbers do you get on an average day?
None.
Okay. I want to thank you for taking the time with us today. I think this has been, if you'll pardon the expression, it's been quite a revelation. I've learned, and I hope our listeners have learned quite a bit of the world of the Santa Claus. It's good stuff. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, so that was outstanding. You know, I mean, a little shocking. We kind of try to push the edge a little bit.
Yeah.
Not trying to give you your standard ABC family kind of Christmas.
Yeah.
We want to really share with you some of the roots of Christmas.
Yeah.
Because it means that much to us.
Yeah.
And I have to say, if you'll indulge me one
sure.
second.
Sure, yeah.
I have to... continue a Christmas tradition here.
Oh no, what are you doing? What's he? You're not taking your pants off, are you?
Well, I'm unzipping something, but...
Oh, jeez. What are you doing?
It's down here, hold on.
What are you... You give me pills?
I might need them.
Alright, he's digging in his backpack, for those of you listening in at home. You didn't.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea you were doing this.
Yeah.
He's giving me a present. You mean open it on
Let's hear the rapid. And then the set it up part of it is, you know, since you've come on board and people don't know this, you've come on board at Gunnery School, so.
Okay. All right, well, let me open the card first. I don't normally do that. But
right, I appreciate that.
What an awesome picture.
That's a picture of my son in front of a Christmas tree. Like
with
everybody
a football.
Else's. Yeah.
Yeah, with a football.
That's his new passion now is football.
That's
which
awesome.
Which I'm very happy about.
Yeah. I think we may have to, if you've got that picture somewhere, we may have to put that one on the website because that's awesome. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And so this is about the governor's school thing.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a little bit of everything.
Nice wrapping paper, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm digging on the frosty thing. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you know this, but this book's very informational.
212 degrees, the extra degree.
I mean, it's something that you can read when you feel a little down, you know?
Okay. All right.
Because basically, you know, at 211, water didn't boil. At 212, water boils.
Okay.
So, you know, it's something to help you get encouraged to go that extra mile.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
And I thought, you know, since you're in my employ now,
well,
I would pass that on.
Are you hinting at this? Now I have a target for everything I do, 212 degrees.
Yeah, see?
Wow, John.
And if you go all the way back,
yeah,
you go all the way back, there's this DVD-ROM.
There's right a there. Movie. Okay, 212 degrees, the movie, sounds kind of, it sounds kind of intimidating, I'm gonna be honest.
Well, you know, I figured if anybody could take 212 degrees, it would be you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. That's very sweet. I don't have anything for
you. Well, you know,
right at this moment.
You know, you missed the anniversary as well, so.
Yeah, I'd usually do that though.
I understand. It's a pattern I'm used to.
There we go again, and yet again, you've kept that away from me for several months, and then brought it right back up. So, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
and happy holidays, and
season's greetings.
Season's greetings, I think is the best thing to say. Well, thank you, John.
Thank you.